Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
My faith is a big part of who Herman Cain is.
Amazing grace will always be my song of praise.
I think it's outrageous that they will not support him because he is a Mormon.
Why didn't Christ return on October 21? It seems embarrassing for family radio, but God was in charge of everything.
What confessional Lutheranism has is that clear teaching of Christ alone. Solus Christus, Christ for us.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Compared to what we've done so far in this series with Dr. Andrew Steinman, I mean, finding dates, in some cases, certain dates for the events of the Old Testament Jesus' ministry. The New Testament era should be fairly easy. We're talking about a very short amount of time, and we're talking about an awful lot of events that occur there. Now, people often wonder, why does the New Testament narrative, and we're talking here about the book of Acts in the New Testament, why does it just drop off and stop where it does? Why don't we get the rest of the story? That's a question that we'll also answer here in the conclusion of our six-part series on biblical chronology today, the New Testament era. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 9th. Dr. Andrew Steinman kicks it off, and then he also concludes his own series in this hour. And a little bit later, Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will join us to talk about Christianity Under Opposition. We are going to be giving away a copy of the book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology by Dr. Andrew Steinman, to the listener with the best question or comment on biblical chronology. Since it's the end of the series, you do not have to confine your questions to the New Testament era, but to all we've talked about in this series. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Any question on biblical chronology, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address @issuesetc, or you can leave those questions or comments at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago and author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Good to be back, Todd.
Why is it important, and here we're talking New Testament scholarship, for sound New Testament scholarship, that we are able to say, for instance, Paul was in a certain city at a certain time and wrote a certain letter to another church in a certain city at a certain time?
Well, I think one of the reasons is because much of what the New Testament claims about Paul and his letters has been challenged by liberal biblical scholarship that either believes that Paul didn't write the letters or that he didn't write them when he says he did, or when Luke might indicate that he said them, or that he might not have been in the places where Luke said he was. So I think for sound biblical scholarship that uses the Word of God as the truth, and as therefore the true declaration of the gospel, we need to clarify these points so that we can therefore proclaim that there is no problem, even though liberal biblical scholars often think there is a problem.
How much time are we talking about bracketing what we are going to call here the New Testament era?
Well, if we start with, say, Jesus' resurrection in 33 and go through the end, say, just before the deaths of Peter and Paul, which happened in 68, we're talking about 35 years.
Really? I mean, that's a remarkably short amount of time.
Yes, it is.
Okay, what are the benchmarks? We did this with the Old Testament where we were able to say, based on things outside and inside the text of the Bible, there are certain dates that are benchmarks for setting everything else up.
Yeah, there are a number here that relate especially to the book of Acts and Paul's letters. We can start with Peter and John being hauled before the Sanhedrin and told not to preach Christ. This probably had happened in late AD 35 or early AD 36. The reason for this is they're only threatened. They're not imprisoned. They're not persecuted in any way other than being told not to preach the gospel. And so this probably means that Pontius Pilate is still around and in control, and the Jewish authorities are on a short leash. So we can date that to that time. However, when we get to Stephen's martyrdom, our next benchmark, then probably it's the time when Pontius Pilate was removed. He was removed by Vitellus, the Roman governor of Syria, and ordered to return to Rome to see Tiberius. And so this has to happen in late 36, because Tiberius dies in March of 37. So Stephen's martyrdom probably is in AD 36. So that's our next benchmark. Then we can talk about Paul's escape from Damascus as a benchmark. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians, and it's recorded, of course, in the book of Acts in chapter 9. And in 2 Corinthians, Paul notes that a certain King Aretas was in charge of Damascus, and that he had a person he had put over Damascus called an ethnarch. And from a secular history, especially things that are said in Josephus' history, we can date this probably in AD 38, because Herod Agrippa hadn't yet pushed out Aretas from his sphere of influence in Syria and in Damascus, probably not until sometime in late 38 or early 39. So that means Paul probably escaped at sometime in 38 from Damascus. Then we can skip ahead to the death of Herod Agrippa himself. This is mentioned in the book of Acts. And Agrippa, his death is recorded in Acts and in Josephus, and from that we can say that he died in late 43. Then we can jump to when Paul is in Corinth. We're specifically told in Acts 18 that Paul was in Corinth for 18 months, and then Gallio shows up as a proconsul appointed by the Roman emperor. We can tell, therefore, that this probably happened in 51, because Gallio would have assumed his office from what we know from Roman inscriptions that have survived, probably in 51. And so then we can count back 18 months and say Paul arrived in Corinth probably in late AD 49. This is confirmed also by the book of Acts, by the way, because we know that according to Acts, Aquila, native of Pontus, had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because the Jews had been expelled from Rome, and that fits well with what Josephus and the Latin historian Suetonius tell us about the Jews being expelled during Claudius's ninth year, which would have been AD 49. So it kind of all fits with that. So those give us a number of major benchmarks until we have to get to the knotty problem of how many times Paul was in Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's a question we need to address here, but I just want to pause and remark that, first of all, anyone reading the New Testament honestly and then having that secular history alongside has to marvel at its accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, the New Testament doesn't always tell us the reason for things, like when I went into kind of the political things that are going on here. It doesn't tell us, you know, why the apostles, when they're before the Sanhedrin, aren't physically persecuted or thrown in jail, but why Stephen could be martyred. Well, when we know the political history and what's going on with Pontius Pilate, it fits hand in glove, and you do kind of marvel on exactly how accurate the New Testament is, therefore, on many of these things.
And, of course, Luke is not attempting to, I mean, he's not thinking someday someone's going to question this. I better include this little detail. It is entirely, incidental to that, and yet those details are so helpful.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is a great way to talk about how this confirms the accuracy of what Luke is doing in the book of Acts, is that, you know, he's not going out of his way to tie it into outside events. It just kind of naturally falls into his description of things, and it just kind of falls in with what we know of the history of the Roman Empire during this period. And so, you know, this is the mistake, of course, that forgers often make in the ancient world, is they try to tie things specifically to events and often get them wrong. And Paul just kind of doesn't try to do that. He just kind of naturally throws these things in. So when Gallio was proconsul, and he doesn't go any further than that and try to make a big deal out of it, he just notes it. And it just fits perfectly when Gallio was proconsul, for instance, that Paul's in Corinth. So rather than doing the thing that forgers often did in the ancient world when they got it wrong, Luke just kind of naturally gives us Paul's movements and the events of the early church, and they all just kind of fit because, of course, the Holy Spirit is guiding him, and, of course, Luke is a very good historian.
Now, when we come back, before we move on to how many times did Paul go to Jerusalem, which is a thorny and vexing problem, we will set a couple other dates, if we can, as closely as we can, in particular things like the conversion of Saul. Stay tuned.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The Faith, Once for All, Delivered to the Saints. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. Issuesetc.org. Stay connected. Issuesetc.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about New Testament chronology. The conclusion of our six-part series on biblical chronology with Dr. Andrew Steinman, professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University of Chicago and author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. We are giving away a copy of From Abraham to Paul in the next half hour to the listener with the best question or comment on biblical chronology. Now, this book retails for $79.99, so this is a pretty big giveaway. Best question or comment, our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or leave that question or comment at our Facebook fan page. If you're at Facebook, just type issues, etc., up on the top, or go to facebook.com/issuesetc. Dr. Steinman, when then was Paul converted? When does the Damascus Road thing happen?
Well, it has to happen probably before the middle of AD 36. And the reason for this is we already talked about how Pilate was dismissed. Well, his successor is a man named Marcellus, and Marcellus doesn't show up to take office probably until the middle of 36 or so. So Paul gets this permission to go to Damascus, and continue the persecution there. Well, I'm sure that if there were a Roman governor in place, he would have probably clamped down on this, and from all we know about Marcellus, he tries to do this, and so we pretty much have to place Paul's conversion then before Marcellus can, you know, assume office and kind of bring some of this turmoil to a halt, because the Romans, of course, don't like turmoil in their lands. And so since he takes office in the middle of 36, Paul probably is converted on the Damascus Road sometime in 36 before the middle of the year.
So he talks in, I believe, Galatians, and kind of gives us some time periods of what happened to him after that. And that leads us to this question of when and how often Paul actually goes down to Jerusalem to present himself or to confer with the other apostles. What's the problem here, date-wise?
Well, the problem is that Paul mentions three times in Galatians that he goes went to Jerusalem, okay? But the problem is coordinating with Acts, because Luke records at least five visits of Paul to Jerusalem, and the last one is clearly after Galatians was written.
Why is Galatians important here? I know it's important for a couple reasons.
Yeah, well, it's important because Paul testifies, to the truth of his gospel, and then talks about his life and gives a brief biographical sketch of his life as it relates to the gospel and his conversion and so forth. And so after his conversion, he talks about going down to Jerusalem three times. And the problem is to match up these three times with the first four times in the book of Acts. Which three of the four does it match up with? Or is Paul leaving one out somewhere by accident? Or is he leaving one out on purpose? Or, you know, what's going on? That's the big question, is what's going on in Galatians to match it up with the first four in which three of the four is he talking about and why?
Does it also tie into, think Acts 15 with this, the so-called Jerusalem Council, and then varying theories on when one will date the actual authorship of Galatians?
Yeah, it does. All those things tie in here, and especially the Jerusalem Council, because, of course, the concern of the Jerusalem Council is, do Christians who are not Jewish ethnically, people who come to believe in Jesus, but they have not been Jewish previous to this, do they have to become Jewish? Do they have to adopt, circumcision and all the Jewish laws, or don't they? And, of course, Paul in Galatians takes this up, and so Paul argues, on the basis of the gospel, and, of course, in line with what the council eventually in Jerusalem also did was that, no, you don't have to become Jewish first to become Christian, that the Gentiles can come in and they don't have to keep all these laws that we find in the books of Moses. And so Paul's discussion here dovetails quite nicely with the discussion at the Jerusalem Council.
Again, another opportunity to kind of marvel at the connection here, because Luke's writing about this thing, and Paul's writing about it, and as far as we can tell, neither of the men are aware of the others writing of this, are they?
Right, yeah. We don't know that Luke knows about what Paul wrote in his letter to Galatians. He may or may not. But they seem to be writing kind of independently here.
Okay, so how, and this is rather complicated, but I think you can make it simple for us. How do you get to what you have called here kind of an absolute date for the visits of Paul to Jerusalem, and in particular that Jerusalem Council?
Yeah, well, Paul talks about, you know, how things happened in here, and so he talks about how he met with Peter and James 3 years after his conversion, and then he talks about 14 years after his conversion, he went to Jerusalem with Barnabas, and he took Titus with him. So those two dates we have, so if we can figure out how these match up with the things in Acts, Paul now gives us years. We know the year he must have been converted, and so we can do some counting and figure out when these other events happen if we can match them up with the Acts thing. In Acts, we know Acts 9, Barnabas introduces Paul to the apostles in Jerusalem. He was there then. We know in Acts 11, Barnabas and Paul delivered aid in response to the prophecy of Agabus about a famine, and they bring aid down to Jerusalem. In Acts 15, there's the Council of Jerusalem. Paul is there for this Jerusalem Council that we've just talked about. And so, you know, there's three. Now we've got two visits of Paul. So how does these two visits of Paul match up with these three visits? Some people have said that the first visit pretty clearly is when Barnabas introduces Paul to the apostles. This happens 3 years after Paul's conversion. Paul's counting inclusively, by the way, so he counts 36, the year of his conversion, 37, and then 38, and so he's there 38, and he calls that 3 years after his conversion. So 14 years later, what happens? Is it the famine relief that Paul and Barnabas deliver from Antioch to Jerusalem, or is it the Council of Jerusalem that's 14 years later? And scholars have debated this back and forth, but I think very clearly when you look at Galatians, you can find the answer by paying attention to the context of Galatians. Paul here is talking about the gospel and how important the gospel is, and he's even swearing to the truth of the gospel in Galatians. And so what he's talking about is the times he went down to Jerusalem when the gospel was discussed with the apostles and elders in Jerusalem. Well, that happened on his first visit when he went down there, and, you know, they were a little afraid of him and whether he was really preaching the gospel or whether this was some type of ruse, and he was still persecuting them, and it's Barnabas who introduces him, takes him by the hand kind of, and leads him to the apostles and shows them he is a brother and he is preaching the gospel. So I think the first mention in Galatians, the first visit in Acts 9. When Paul goes down with the famine relief, the gospel's not at stake. He's just doing the good work of bringing famine relief to the Christians in Jerusalem. There's nothing at stake with the gospel at that time, so I think we can dismiss that one. Paul just skips over that one in Galatians because it has nothing to do with what he wants to talk about, which is the gospel and how it is important for both Jewish and Gentile Christians. And so then when he mentions the second one, 14 years after his conversion, he is talking about the council at Jerusalem. And again, he's counting inclusively. That is, he's counting the first year and the last year, and we would call this 13 years later. Okay, so probably in 49, the Jerusalem Council, very late in the year 49, it takes place. And that then kind of solves the problem, because Paul is not interested in giving us every visit to Jerusalem. Paul is giving us the visits where the gospel was discussed, and especially when the gospel was at stake. And so that solves the problem of how we take these first three notices of Paul's visits to Jerusalem and line them up with Paul's talking about only two visits to Jerusalem.
Real quickly, it's only about 30 seconds. What was he doing during the 14 years?
Paul was doing God's work for much of it. He was preaching. He was working mainly in Antioch with the Jewish Christians. And this, of course, is why at the Jerusalem Council, they decide Peter can continue to work with Jewish Christians, where Paul is going to work with these Gentile Christians, because he was growing in the Lord, growing in his faith, and then working with these Gentile Christians who came to believe in Jesus through the calling of the Holy Spirit.
We're giving away the book From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology by Dr. Andrew Steinman at the conclusion of our six-part series on biblical chronology today, the New Testament Church. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. That book goes to the listener with the best question or comment, 877-623-MY-IE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/issuesetc.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
How do many leaders of pop American Christianity misinterpret the Great Commission? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled The Not-So-Great Commission, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Kelly Klages details her journey from parachurch fellowships to confessional Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Miracles come in threes.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Candace Smith of Louisiana was overjoyed when she found out that she was expecting not one, not two, but three baby girls last year. She and her husband had not expected to have biological children due to Candace's health. She has cystic fibrosis. While doctors advised her to abort the babies to save her own life, Candace refused and knows it was the best decision she ever made. She carried the triplets until 28 weeks, and they were born weighing about 2 pounds each. After 3 months, the couple brought home their baby girls, who continue to thrive.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. In about 10 minutes, we'll be talking with Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, about Christianity under opposition. We're concluding our series with Dr. Andrew Steinman on biblical chronology, the New Testament Church. Any question or comment you have on biblical chronology here at the conclusion is most welcome. I'll call in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, or leave a question or comment at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Herman is listening in Illinois. Herman, thanks for waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Steinman, four books of the New Testament, Gospel of Matthew, Epistles, Galatians, 1 Thessalonians, and James. How would you rate their year of writing, and would it be prior to 61 A.D., the writing of the book of Acts? And what would among those four be their strongest mutually supporting points of witness on Christianity and the gospel?
Thank you very much, Herman. Smartest Listeners in Radio. It's a very good question because those are all in scholarship kind of disputed books with regard to their dates.
It's the Gospel of Mark is hard to date. I would probably date it early. We have no clear indication in the Gospel of Mark of exactly when it was written, but I would probably date it early. Let's see. He asked about 1 Thessalonians, which I would probably date as the earliest of Paul's letter, probably written 50 or 51. What else did he ask about? Galatians?
James was one of the ones he mentioned.
Oh, James, yeah. James is martyred in 62, so it has to be written before 62, and that's about the best I can say.
So, what we're dealing with here is not, it's simply a lack of internal evidence, as
right.
They would say.
Yeah, if we assume James is James, the brother of Jesus, then he's martyred in 62 in Jerusalem, so it has to be written before 62, and that's probably the best we can do.
What about Galatians?
Galatians, that, you know, is up in the air. My best guess is Galatians is written probably in 53 when Paul is in Ephesus teaching in the Hall of Tyrannus. He probably writes to Galatia, not all that far away. That's my guess. Galatians, again, doesn't have a lot of internal markers. It has to be written after these dates that Paul gives. But, you know, Paul gives only those dates that I said. The last one was in 49. By the way, I said late 49. I meant to say early 49, very early, probably January 49, was the Council of Jerusalem. It has to be written after 49. I think it was probably written about 53, about 4 years later, when the controversy makes it up to Galatia.
So where would you put Luke's authorship, since he is writing, and this is an interesting one, because he's writing both Luke and Acts, and it's not clear when he wrote both, but just that one is part one and one is part two. But
yeah,
where would you
put that? Write Luke before he write Acts, because he kind of refers to Luke in the beginning of the book of Acts. Acts probably is written shortly before Paul is martyred, I would guess. Paul dies in late 67 or early 68, so Acts, you know, that's probably the very latest you can put Acts. Paul arrives in Rome in 58, so sometime between 58 and March 58, when Paul arrives in Rome, and early 68, you have a window for he could have written Acts. And whenever you date Acts, then you got to back off some and say he wrote Luke before that. And that's about the best you can do, because there are no internal markers in the Gospel of Luke to do much else.
Now, I think I understand all that stuff about the relationship of Acts and Luke. I've often wondered, people often ask, why is it that the book of Acts just kind of ends the way it does?
My guess is it ends there because at that point, Luke has told us what we need to know about Paul going west to Rome and the spread of the gospel that far west. Which has actually preceded Paul. There's actually Christians there when he gets there. But it's talking about the spread of the gospel, and Luke drops a story there for that reason. Probably he doesn't go into the other things that happen. Paul probably is put in the released from custody in 60, either because they haven't happened yet, which would then say that Acts has to be written probably before the spring of 60, when Paul's probably released from prison, or because he's simply not interested in that. He's made his point about the gospel spreading kind of to the ends of the earth. But I think it's probably very likely then that Acts is written between 58, when Paul arrives in Rome, and 60, when Paul is released from custody, since Luke doesn't know anything about that, or at least doesn't tell his readers anything about that, just kind of leaves them hanging. So if we can use that, and we're a little bit tenuous here because we don't know why Luke doesn't tell us more, but if we can say, well, it hasn't happened yet, then we probably can date the composition of Acts probably to 59, which means the Gospel of Luke has to be earlier than that.
Is it possible that, you know, he wrote part one, part two, Dr. Paul Meyer has fancied, wouldn't it be nice if there were a part three there that picks up and just gives us the rest of the story? Is it possible he leaves off in Acts because he intends to write another letter to Theophilus?
That may well be, and for all we know, he did write another letter to Theophilus and outline those things, but it wasn't preserved because he didn't do that one under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit like he did the first two. It's entirely possible that he does consider to continue the story from time to time with Theophilus.
The New Testament era that is bookended by the end of the book of Acts is not really all the story. There is more, and it involves the Apostle John, who goes on to live another 30 years, and to have the longest ministry and the natural death among all the apostles. How would you date his gospel, his epistles, those short ones at the end of the New Testament, and his revelation of Jesus Christ?
Yeah, they're likely later. And you're right, he probably does likely live longer. The problem with dating them, however, is he doesn't give us any good chronological markers. I think they're probably later because the Gospel of John has a number of touches which seems to say it's written to a Roman audience. He uses Roman time instead of Jewish time. We talked about this last time. He talks about the Sea of Galilee by its Roman name, the Sea of Tiberias. It was named after the Emperor Tiberius, and so that in itself probably tells us that it was during or after Tiberius's reign. And he seems to be writing to an audience that has a lot of Roman interests. That in itself says to me that it's probably later, maybe even he writes these things for the persecuted Christians in Rome, you know, and Peter and Paul die in this great persecution of Nero in 67 or 68, just before Nero himself commits suicide. And so Tiberius is mentioned here, and he becomes emperor after this. So that all seems to indicate John is writing after Luke, after Mark, after Matthew.
Just real quickly, can we get any even close to, with about less than a minute, can we get to a close date of when he's on Patmos, when he at least receives the revelation that he later records in the book of Revelation?
Well, we can speculate about things, but it's only speculation, and I don't think we can give a hard and fast date. I think it's got to be at least the late part or after the reign of Tiberius, but that just takes us, you know, into the 70s, and anything after that is fair game for dating when he's on Patmos and which persecution, because these persecutions spring up locally and at various places in the empire. And what persecution he get caught up in, and which one of them send him to Patmos, it's hard to say.
With only 30 seconds, you've looked at this, and it's a timeline. Why is it important for even the casual student of Scripture to be able to place these things in history? About 30 seconds.
Well, I think because it helps us illuminate the Bible better with the secular history. If we know what was going on outside the Bible, sometimes that adds to our understanding of what the Bible is talking about, because it makes kind of references to these things offhand, and if we can kind of have a better handle on that, then we understand, oh, that's why it says that. That's what it's getting at. That's what the original audience would have understood that I don't understand unless I can put it in its historical context.
Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago. author of the new book, From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology. Now, you can browse before you buy at our website for this great book. It really is a fantastic book by Dr. Andrew Steinman. Issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House and order a copy of From Abraham to Paul. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for From Abraham to Paul, A Biblical Chronology by Dr. Andrew Steinman. Dr. Steinman, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it.
Herman in Illinois, would you send us your name and your mailing address? Talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll send you From Abraham to Paul. Thanks for the excellent question. When we come back, Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will join us to talk about Christianity in the face of opposition. Hey, St. Louis listeners, our local affiliate, AM 1320, Bot Radio Network, lowers its signal power at 445 until the end of the year, but you can still listen to Issues Etc. full power at issuesetc.org. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org. Listen to what you want, when you want, Issues Etc.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
It's here, it's here, it's finally here. Lutheran Catechesis Catechist Edition, a comprehensive guide to catechesis for a Lutheran congregation, including expanded helps on the catechism, a section of catechesis on the table of duties, Christian vocation, and learn-by-heart schedules for the congregation at prayer. Order yours today from the Concordia Catechetical Academy at peacesussex.org.